would like to thank the organizers of this workshop for giving me the opportunity to speak here. So the title of my talk is Writer's Property P1 for Locally Compact Quantum Groups, and I'd like to start by first explaining what is Writer's Property P1 for Locally Compact Groups, then why is it interesting, why should anyone care to translate that into a quantum group setting, and then how it can actually be done. Okay, so right, I still have to learn how to handle two projectors. Okay, so let me just start with amenability for locally compact groups. So G is a locally compact group, Lx of f, I denote the left translate of a function. Well, and here is the usual definition of an amenable locally compact group. So there is some state on the abelian von Neumann algebra L infinity of G, which is left invariant in the following sense. Of course, we can also choose right invariant or two-sided invariant. And then, well, we can, of course, approximate that state M by normal states in the weak star topology, then pass to convex combinations, and we get this very well-known characterization. A locally compact group G is amenable if and only if we have a net M alpha of non-negative norm 1 functions in L1 of G such that it's asymptotically left invariant in the following sense. Okay. So, what's Reiter's property P1? Well, Reiter in the 60s introduced an uncountable family of properties called PP. What is that? G is said to have Reiter's property PP for any P in 1 infinity if there is a net M alpha of non-negative norm 1 functions in LP of G such that, well, it's asymptotically left invariant, but with the little twist that this asymptotically left invariance is not just pointwise, but uniformly on all compact subsets. Okay, so it's slightly formally slightly stronger than amenability. Well, but it's only formally slightly stronger. So here is Reiter's theorem. The following are equivalent. G is amenable. G has Reiter's property P1. It has Reiter's property for all P, or it has Reiter's property PP for just one P. Well, the equivalence of 2, 3, and 4 is probably less than deep. It's just taking roots and using some standard inequalities. Implication 1 and from 2 to 1 is trivial. 1 to 2 requires a little more attention, but it's not terribly deep theorem. So why should anybody care about Reiter's property P1 or P whatever? Okay, so, well, there's a very famous theorem, probably the first significant theorem about the so-called Fourier algebra, as introduced by Pierre Aymar in his paper from the mid-60s. So Aymar, I think that was 67, I believe, that his paper came out, and was it 4 or 64? Okay, and it was about 4 years later that Horst Leptin in the Compte Rendu published his theorem, which said a group G is amenable if and only if the Fourier algebra has a bounded approximate identity. So Aymar also introduced the Fourier-Stieltjes algebra of G, and Leptin's theorem, here it's again, G is amenable if and only if A of G has a norm 1 bounded approximate identity. Okay, so how did Leptin prove it? Well, one direction, if A of G has a norm 1 BAI, that is fairly easy to see that then G is amenable. But the converse, that's the hard stuff. Well, Leptin did it by using Fellner-type conditions. In fact, he used a Fellner-type condition that's now named after him called Leptin's condition. Well, and what I want to show you is that Reiter's property P2 can be used to give you an alternative proof of Leptin's theorem, which avoids Fermat type conditions. Well, how does it go? Well, there's a theorem very little known in the paper in the Rocky Mountain Journal due to Edgar Neera and Michael Leinert, which says that on the unit sphere, so the elements of norm 1 of the Fourier-Schiltjes algebra, the topology of uniform convergence on compact subsets is the same as the topology, well, which we get as regarding B of G as multipliers on A of G. Okay, and so here's a proof of the more difficult direction of Lepton's theorem. So if G is amenable, it has Reiter's property P2. So then we get a net in L2 as required by P2, and we define then an associated net E alpha in the Fourier algebra. Well, and it's very easy to see that this net converges to the function constant equal to 1 in the topology of compact uniform convergence on compact subsets. But then it converges in the multiplier topology, which means it's a bounded approximate identity for the Fourier algebra. Okay, so that is Lepton's theorem. Well, and now I have to admit, when I prepared these transparencies, I did not know yet that I would speak after Leonid Weinermann, who would introduce the definitions of a locally compact quantum group, but I think a little repetition will not hurt. So I want to start with Hopf von Neumann algebras. So the tensor sign with a bar on top of it is the usual von Neumann algebra tensor product. And Hopf von Neumann algebra is a pair, M gamma, Leonid used a delta, where M is a von Neumann algebra, and gamma is a co-multiplication, that's a unital injective normal star homomorphism from M into the von Neumann algebra tensor product with itself that is co-associative. Well, and here are the main examples I have in mind. First, if we take a locally compact group G, M is L infinity of G, well, then here we have a co-multiplication gamma sub G, as described here, and it just comes from the product of the group. Well, and here is another example. M is Vn of G, that is the group von Neumann algebra, that is the von Neumann algebra acting on L2 of G, generated by left translate. Some authors like to call it L of G, but it's just some different notation, and we have a co-multiplication like that. So these are the examples Leonid called trivial locally compact quantum groups. Okay, so well, for any Hopf von Neumann algebra, M gamma, the unique pre-dual of the Hopf von Neumann algebra M gamma is a completely contractive Banach algebra via this formula. Well, we want to define the product, which I denote by an asterisk. You'll see in a second why. How it acts on an element of the von Neumann algebra M. Well, we just take F tensor G and let it act on gamma of X. Well, why do I denote it by an asterisk? Well, if we just take L infinity G, gamma G, well, then it's just L1 of G with the usual convolution of L1 functions. And if we choose the second example I gave, namely the group von Neumann algebra with gamma G sub hat, it's just the Fourier algebra with pointwise multiplication. Okay, so now let me briefly recall what the Haar weight is. So we have the Hopf von Neumann algebra. A left Haar weight is an NFS. So previous speaker used NSF, but I don't want to get any confusion with the National Science Foundation. So it's NFS, standing for normal, faithful, and semi-finite. Well, what does that mean? So if the symbol here, F tensor it, that's a Tomiyama slicer. And so I slice gamma X down to M, apply the weight to it, and then I get the right left-hand side. Well, what is the script m sub phi? This is just the linear span of all the elements in the positive cone where phi is finite. And that definition means implicitly that the left-hand side actually is well-defined for such x. Well, and similarly, you can define a right R with. Okay, and what is a locally compact quantum group then? Well, it's just a Hopf von Neumann algebra that's put on a little weight. So the notation is slightly different. A locally compact quantum group, I abbreviated as LCQ G, is a quadruple M gamma, where M gamma is a Hopf von Neumann algebra, phi is a left Hausdorff, and psi is a right Hausdorff. Well, and our two examples of Hopf von Neumann algebras, well, these are locally compact quantum groups. Just take left Hausdorff measure, take right Hausdorff measure. Well, and what about V and G? Well, there are indeed such weights, and it's called, well, they're equal because it's a co-commutative quantum group, and it's the so-called Planck-Rayleigh. I don't want to go into the details. Look them up in Takisaki 2, where it's all nicely described, and it's just they do exist. Well, and I'm very grateful to Leonid Feinermann for giving lots more examples. I just have mentioned, well, Voronovich SUQ2, that is probably the first of these, well, non-group and non, well, dual to a group examples of a locally compact quantum group. And as you already said, I mean, this has a long, long history, this definition. Vass and Kustermans, they stand on the shoulders of many others, Katz, Weinermann, Enoch, Schwarz, Bass, Condalis. There were previous axioms, Edfors, Juan, Voronovich, so I hope I haven't omitted any important names. So let me just repeat something that was already in the previous talk. Well, we have a locally compact quantum group. We have two weights, so we can do GNS construction, have the GNS map lambda sub phi from n sub phi. Okay, these are the elements where star x has finite weight. Well, and then there is the unique unitary, the multiplicative unitary of G, which is defined in that following fashion. So it's easy to see that W star, as defined in that fashion, is an isometry, but you have to work really hard to see that it's indeed a unitary. Okay, and it satisfies this pentagonal relation. For those of you who don't know what these indices mean, what we do is we have an operator that acts on H tensor H, and we amplify it to H tensor H tensor H. So we have to insert the identity as one leg, and so W2 sub 3 means on the third and the on the second and the third factor it acts like W, on the first like the identity, and same with the other ones. Okay, and this operator implements the co-multiplication just by amplifying and conjugating. Okay, so I think I have one more slide of this boring stuff. So here is some notation which was introduced by Zhongjin Ruan, and because it emphasizes really the parallels between quantum groups and locally compact groups, so M we denote L infinity of G, L1 of G we denote the pre-dual, L2 of G is the Hilbert space obtained from the left Hausdorff, and there is also an object, well, which I like to denote C naught of G, which is the, well, the reduced C star algebraic picture of the same quantum group in the terminology used by Vass Kustermann. It's defined in that way. It's fairly easy to see that that is an algebra, but to work, but really to show that it's a C star algebra requires a deep property of W called manageability, and that's so I'm glossing here over an awful lot of deep mathematics. And the dual, well, I denote it by M of G for obvious reasons. Well, and for locally compact group G, these are the usual objects, and if we have what I denote by G hat, I have to make sure that I pronounce it well, not like G hat. So G hat, it's Vn with these objects. Well, L infinity of G hat is Vn of G, L1 of G hat is A of G, well, C naught of G hat is the reduced group C star algebra, and M of G hat is Br of G. Well, and why did I get interested in locally compact quantum groups? Well, they allow for the development of a very interesting duality theory, so I'm glossing over an awful lot here, but we can really indicate that in somewhat more detail. For every locally compact quantum group, we can come up with a dual quantum group. We have Pontryagin duality iterated, and we wind up with our original object. Well, and it turns out that L infinity and the group von Neumann algebra are dual to each other. Well, this duality extends the usual duality of groups for abelian locally compact groups, and we call a locally compact quantum group compact if the left Hall weight lies in L1. You can, there are zillions, well not zillions, but many other equivalent definitions. For example, it is compact if and only if C naught of G is unital, so, and we call it discrete if L1 of G is unital. If you remember the previous talk, there it was defined to be if the dual is compact, but it's just the same. So that shows that it's really a very useful, probably a very good definition of duality.